Again, welcome everyone to the Chesapeake Bay Comprehensive Water Resources and Restoration Plan webinar. My name is Maria Lance with the Corps of Engineers, and I'll be your facilitator and host today. So to start us off, I'd like to go ahead and pass it over to Jake Riley, the Director of National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, for opening remarks.
Thanks so much, Maria. Appreciate the opportunity. I'm Jake Riley. I'm the Director of Chesapeake Bay Programs here for the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. NFWF is serving as the lead non-federal sponsor with the Army Corps on this Chesapeake Bay Comprehensive Plan. So I want to thank the Corps team for pulling together this webinar, and also just as important, the broad range of external stakeholders that are participating and listening in. As we've tried to sort of communicate throughout this process, really the two-plus years that we've been engaged with this conversation with the Corps and the broader set of stakeholders, NFWF is really happy and excited to be playing this role with the Corps, and more specifically working to sort of serve as a conduit to support the input from a broad range of stakeholders involved in the Chesapeake Bay Program Partnership and broader affiliated partnerships into this comprehensive plan. And so, webinars like this are incredibly important to both update partners on where we stand with this comprehensive plan, but also to continue to afford opportunities for partners to weigh in with their own priorities, provide supporting information and data that can help with the analysis. So I'm really excited for us to really start to dive in a little bit more detail. I know that we've had several opportunities for stakeholders to engage in-person meetings back in November, a series of webinars and calls as we worked on developing the scope and the approach to this comprehensive plan. But we're really starting to reach a point now where the horsepower is starting to get ginned up, and we're really looking at a range of different mechanisms and activities that the core team is really looking to push forward. So a critical time for folks to be engaged, and really appreciate everyone taking time here on a Monday morning to participate. So that's all I have. I'll turn it back to Maria.
Great. Thanks, Jake. All right, so I'll go ahead and get into what we're going to cover today on the webinar. You see the agenda here on the slides. Going to review what the team has been working on so far, the key authorities and documents, study area, shared vision, background, stakeholder collaboration efforts, goals, draft objectives, measures, plan formulation, and maps. So we've got several speakers lined up to go over the content that the team has put together so far, and we'll definitely be looking for any questions and comments on that substantive information. And then after that, we're going to do a Q&A, followed by some interactive activities where we're going to ask for your feedback and some information, a review of the data call. Some of you will have seen some information requested coming out of Baltimore District, and then a discussion of next steps. So what I do want to point out here is there's a bunch of content that we'll cover before we get to the Q&A. And so during that time, you guys are going to be on mute. But I do really want you to use the chat feature to chat in any comments or questions that you have during that presentation. And we'll go to those comments and questions first when we hit the Q&A period. But also when we get to the Q&A, I will unmute you all so you can, get on the phone and ask any questions or provide any information or feedback or comments. So just to review that really quickly, I do have some of you still chatting to me directly. So top right, you've got your chat icon, the little cloud. And when you click on that, or if it's appearing in your menu below, I want to make sure you're seeing the drop-down box that says Send To, and please check and see if it's set to everyone. The default is for it to be set to me, the host, and I want to make sure that all of the presenters and everyone else on the line sees your comments and your questions as well. So just on the drop-down menu, select everyone for when you send in your messages. Unless you have a technical problem or some issue you want to chat to me privately, that's fine. All right, so I think with that, and I just wanted to make a note that I know some of you are at the November workshop, so you're going to hear some content that's similar to them, but many of you were not, so the team definitely wanted to review some key information as they get started. So with that, I will pass it over to Dave Robbins, the Acting Chief of the Civil Project Development Branch Planning for Baltimore District. Dave, are you on mute?
Hey, good morning, everyone. Thanks again for joining us today. My name is Dave Robbins from the Baltimore District. I'm just going to give you a few updates on a few slides here. But before I do, just want to thank everyone for joining us today, reiterating a few notes that Jake mentioned. We really wanted to get this investigation moving, and we're really excited to get started, really excited about the turnout. We saw a few folks on the webinar screen that we've been in coordination with along the way, but also some new names as well. So really excited and pleased that you're joining us here this morning. So with that, we'll jump right into the slides. So the slides you're seeing here is the key authorities. Corps of Engineers has authority to complete the Chesapeake Bay Comprehensive Plan. We received this authority back in 2002, following from the 2000 Chesapeake Bay Watershed Agreement. The reason it's taken so long is because we had requested funding since the initial authority was passed going back to September 2002, but we finally received our funding back in FY14 to actually get started with the reconnaissance effort for this particular watershed assessment. So we do have authority, and it's been a long time coming to a point where we can actually get this study going. Again, we're really excited to be underway with this effort. Subsequent to the initial authority, we did receive an additional update in terms of direction from Congress, as well as other guiding documents that are helping formulate and define the processes and analyses we'll complete as part of this watershed assessment to present the Chesapeake Bay Comprehensive Plan document that we're going to see later and ultimately be presented final in July 2018. The first of which is the WERDA 2014. That was essentially an authorizing document that Congress passed back in June of 2014, which indicated that the Chesapeake Bay Comprehensive Plan would need to be completed within 2 years. So that was a significant component to our overall constraints to complete the study, among other things, as well as the planning bulletin, the 2016 watershed studies guidance document from the Corps of Engineers. You can use your favorite search engine to search either of these two documents to get a sense for the overall guidance for what the Corps of Engineers will be completing to move forward with this study. And then obviously we need to align with the Chesapeake Bay Agreement of 2014 and the Executive Order 13508, which is currently still intact. So next slide is just the study authority. This is, again, the 2002 authority, and basically, I'm not going to read all this, it boils down to the fact that the comprehensive plan that the Corps is undertaking is it would be presenting a plan for restoring the Bay ecosystem, integrating existing and future work by the Corps, and doing so in cooperation with the Bay partners toward meeting the 2014 Chesapeake Bay Watershed Agreement. So next slide is the study area. We just want to be able to present here during the webinar, again, a schematic of the study area in which we're working. It's comprised of 64,000 square mile drainage area of the watershed drains to the Bay proper. And we also want to identify here on the figure two that two Corps of Engineers districts, the Baltimore District and Norfolk District, have authority to work within this area of responsibility, which is the Chesapeake Bay watershed. So representatives from both Baltimore District and Norfolk District here today are here to talk about what we're doing with the study and really breaking down some of the analyses and get us to where we are to move forward. So with that, I'll pass it on to the next presenter.
Great. Thanks, Dave. So next up, we have Anna Compton, a biologist in the planning division of the Corps Baltimore District.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. This slide here is just showing our vision for the study. The core is required under our watershed authority, as Dave mentioned before, that we're operating under. We're supposed to develop a vision, a desired end state for the watershed we're working in. Luckily for us in Chesapeake Bay, there was already a vision established through the Chesapeake Bay Watershed Agreement. So what we had recommended was simply aligning with that vision. We presented that to the group in November, and we also sent it out via email. And the feedback we got was, yep, that sounds good. There was a lot of concurrence, and to add that word, and resilient, so that's capitalized there. So we've really taken that to heart, and everything that we're doing from here on out is to try to fit and proceed the Bay further to fit that vision and make sure we investigate a resilient Chesapeake Bay, which is making sure that the opportunities that we evaluate and recommend will stand the test of time with all the environmental, the changing conditions in the Bay. Next slide, please. Okay, just a quick background here. So again, we're just looking for implementation actions to protect, restore, and preserve the Bay. The two things I really want to point out here are adopting and aligning with what others are doing and avoiding duplication of what others are doing. So the big really portion of the work that we've been doing, and one of the key messages we wanted to get point out to you all today, is that we're really trying to get an understanding of what else is going on in the Bay. Basically, all the coordination we've done to date, we found there's a lot of good work going on in the Bay. We don't want to duplicate that work. The opportunity we have here with this comprehensive plan is we don't have really restrictions as far as political boundaries, specific habitats, specific sub-watersheds. We can look at anything, but our constraint is that our time frame is pretty quick, but also we don't want to be redoing the work that's already done. So for us, a successful plan is one that will actually provide implementation opportunities that that aren't being done. And we want to act as a catalyst to catapult other actions going on. So that's why we're doing a lot of these webinars and things like that and reaching out, because we want to make sure we're not avoiding or duplicating efforts. And finally, so we're using a lot of existing information. We're focusing on the ecological problems, needs, opportunities. And part of our guidance, we're looking for projects throughout the watershed, but specifically we want to identify at least one project, if not more, per Bay State and in D.C. Next slide, please. Okay, and this slide basically just touches on all the collaboration we've done to date. You're going to hear a lot about stakeholder input throughout the slides and the technical work that we've been doing. We are going to keep pointing you to our website. The slides today are going to go on there. We have an email distribution list that we're constantly updating just to keep people informed and stakeholders informed of what we're doing. We had our November workshop. We're still incorporating the information that we gathered from that workshop. We have the webinar today. This is a big watershed, so we don't have any other in-person planned activities because we want to make sure we can get, we can really collaborate and touch base with folks throughout the watershed. So we sent out a couple data calls, which we're going to get to at the end of the presentation today and touch on those a bit. We're going to have at least two more webinars in April and in June, and then we're going to have a review. Anyone who's interested, we're going to put the draft plan out for review, and that'll be sometime later in the summer. Okay.
Great. Thanks, Anna. All right. Next up, we have Alicia Legalbo, the Chief of the Environmental Analysis Section with the Corps Norfolk District.
Hi. Good morning, Maria. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sound good.
Okay, great. So our goal is to develop a comprehensive and integrated master plan, and it's essentially for restoring, preserving, and protecting the Chesapeake Bay ecosystem to assist with implementation of the 2014 Chesapeake Bay Agreement. And so as components of this, you know, a really key part of this is engaging with all of you, our stakeholders, to help identify problems, needs, opportunities, and also, as Anna alluded to, we're not trying to repeat analyses or, you know, restoration projects that are already planned and already kind of coming through a funding phase. So we're trying to help identify those projects and opportunities, but not trying to redo, for example, a lot of the analyses, but leverage off of a lot of the information that's already been done, for example, with the Chesapeake Bay program. We're also trying to determine where and how the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers could be utilized to help implement some of these projects and plans and supporting the goals of the Bay Agreement, although that's not our only primary purpose of this particular plan. So in a strategic watershed plan, we're looking for all actions needed within the watershed to help achieve the goals and outcomes of the 2014 agreement. So we're also looking for those other actions that would be incorporated into the plan but done by other federal, state, and local government agencies and also non-governmental organizations to address problems that are outside of our particular mission areas. Next slide. In terms of the objectives, we've already alluded to developing the comprehensive and strategic integrated water resources plan to help guide those implementation of projects in terms of not only the projects but the resources and sequencing of tasks to help assist in meeting the 2014 Chesapeake Bay Agreement. We'll be especially focused, for example, in identifying opportunities for ecosystem restoration, protection, and or preservation to help meet those Bay Agreement goals and outcomes. And as alluded to in our U.S. Army Corps of Engineers implementation guidance under the Water Resources Reform and Development Act of 2014, we'll be working to identify at least one project in each state and the D.C. area that can be considered for implementation or technical assistance. Once again, we're really getting to supporting the implementation and the, you know, construction of projects, for example, that can help support the Bay Agreement. We'll also be identifying potentially new policies or programs. If there's any barriers in relation to our existing policies or maybe new policies that are needed or programs to help achieve an environmentally and economically sustainable and resilient watershed. Next slide. So as we're working to develop the strategic watershed plan, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, you'll hear us use the term measures in terms of the planning process. And those are basically our building blocks for developing the watershed plan, typically at a particular site. So you might have a measure or a series of measures at a particular site. So these would be the components that go into the plan. So for example, in terms of environmental enhancement and restoration measures, I'm just giving you a flavor of potential measures that could go into a plan. This is not meant to be a strategic or comprehensive listing of all potential measures that could be used. For example, you could be planting native vegetation at a restoration site. And you'll see I have little stars next to some of these measures, and those are areas of potential partnership. Those are fall within our mission areas or aligned with our mission areas where we could work with a particular non-federal sponsor to implement a particular project that could go into the strategic watershed plan. Other potential measures could be construction of oyster reefs using alternative substrate like recycled concrete, for example, or removal of a dam for a fish passage, or it could be, you know, installing fish ladders, things like that. In terms of submerged aquatic vegetation, they could be harvesting of seeds and dispersing seeds as a particular project, or, you know, treating various invasive species, such as mechanically removing invasive English ivy. And you'll see these are all highly linked with the Chesapeake Bay 2014 agreement. And also, in terms of conservation, I would expect there also to be a series of measures, too, to help meet some of the goals and outcomes in the 2014 agreement, such as designation of oyster sanctuaries, for example, for permanent conservation, or landowners designating wetland conservation easements. There's also particular projects that could have environmental as well as other benefits, such as flood risk management benefits, shoreline protection benefits, or stewardship benefits. For example, planting of native dune grasses, which could provide shoreline protection as well as ecosystem restoration. Beneficially using dredge materials from navigation channels to restore eroding marsh islands, or it could be shoreline wetlands, and, you know, that is in line with our navigation mission, but also provides a way of attenuation and environmental benefits as well. Another potential option could be high school students conducting monitoring of a wetland restoration site or restoring reefs using alternative substrate. And reefs are interesting because they can also reduce wave attenuation and protect eroding shorelines as well as provide substantive ecosystem benefits. Also, constructing a living shoreline could be another potential measure that could go into the plan that protects an eroding shoreline and reduces wave attenuation. So these are all potential measures we're considering, not meant to be a comprehensive listing. And you know, as Anna alluded to, we're trying to get our feedback from you today and the objectives and goals we presented those are drafts. We're always looking to revise and refine those as well as the measures, and we're especially looking for stakeholder feedback on restoration projects that you would like to see implemented in the watershed. Thank you.
Great, thank you. And just a reminder for anyone who has also maybe joined us later, as the presenters go through the content, please feel free to chat in any questions or comments you might have in the chat box. So just a reminder, if you go to the top right part of your screen, you'll see chat with the little cloud. You can click on that, or if it's in your drop-down menu, just find where it says chat, and then go to send to and click the drop-down menu again and hit everyone and chat in anything you would like to hear more about or any comments you have on what you are seeing. All right, so next I want to pass it to Angie Sowers and Jason O'Neill. Angie is an Integrated Water Resources Management Specialist with the Planning Division at Baltimore District, and Jason is the GIS Team Lead for the Geospatial Section of the CORE's Norfolk District.
Hi, this is Angie. I'm going to start us off, and Maria. Okay, here we are. This, I'm going to go through our formulation that we're developing and some of our initial products or draft products that we've started to work on. So this schematic here, it shows our general process of getting to our final full strategy product. And at the very top, we've summarized the problems of the bay into three categories: the flooding and storm damages, ecosystem degradation, and economic and social vulnerabilities. And those problems, we're going to document, we're going to identify constraints and document our inventory of the existing conditions. This is our typical core planning process here in the beginning. We're going to forecast future projections. And then the middle here is really where we get into our GIS analyses and our formulation to develop our strategies and recommendations. First, we want to understand how the priorities of the other agencies, NGOs, other restoration partners align in the landscape of the bay and understand the relationships between the different agency priorities. We're going to do a composite analysis that I'll get into in the next slide, but that's really where we're going to look at the environmental resources and some other aspects of what's going on in the bay and trying to take all this GIS data and make some sense out of it. And then the last piece, looking at, so we have where people want to focus. The composite analysis will be the technical piece, and then we have where are others, you know, working now and trying to put all these pieces together to look at our findings, identify needs and opportunities, and then develop our strategies. So the final bottom piece here, it are all the components of that full Chesapeake Bay Comprehensive Plan. We're going to have a roadmap for use-safe actions. We're going to have actions that we'd like to propose that others could take on under their authorities that don't fit within our use-safe mission. And then there'll also be a funding and implementation strategy, and then these state plans that were mentioned. So if we can move to the next slide. This next slide, I'm going to go through this. I'm not going to read through this. But this is so that you can refer back to later if you want to see all the problems that we outlined and where they fit in those three larger categories. And so if we go to the next slide then, this is really the meat of our formulation, and it's that composite analysis tied with the priorities and the actions going on in the watershed. And we've been working, talking with the Chesapeake Bay program, they're kind of doing some similar work, and so we want to leverage our efforts here and make sure that we're not duplicating, but maybe working together on this. But so the horizontal arrows are going to each be individual analyses where we develop a map or two that summarizes that data. So we would like to have one view that shows where all our current use-safe work is going on. The connectivity analysis gets to where are those critical habitat connectivity pieces in the watershed. We also would like the healthy high value habitats. We like want a summary of where all the healthy habitats are within the watershed. And then conversely, the watershed degradation analysis is an evaluation across the watershed of where are the most impaired areas. The threats analysis will tie into sea level rise as well as urbanization and other threats to resources within the watershed. And the socioeconomic analysis is trying to tie all that to how do we use the watershed, where are the recreational opportunities, where are minority and low-income populations in the watershed, and trying to bring in those aspects. And so each of these would be completed independently, and they will then, we're formulating this, the red arrow or the pink arrow on the right, we're formulating questions, restoration opportunities analysis. We're formulating questions that we want to answer, and these individual analyses will be combined in GIS to answer those restoration questions. And we'll get into that a little bit later. That's probably a bit fuzzy right now to understand, but we want to have targeted questions, targeted objectives that we are trying to answer with this GIS work. So we can move ahead to the next slide, and we're going to walk through quickly those composite analyses that were in those horizontal arrows. So this first is the connectivity analysis. So where are the corridors and other landscape features that are critical connectors in the watershed? And we've identified some pertinent data. It doesn't all translate into a GIS analysis very well. For example, the Atlantic Flyway covers basically the entire watershed. So that in GIS isn't going to really tell you a whole lot. But we've identified these pieces. And so as I go through these slides, if something triggers in your head that, oh, there's a piece of information that I know that would really play into this well, you'll make a note of it and let us know about that. That's one of the reasons that we weren't trying to share this with you the group right now to get some feedback as to if there's any other data out there that we haven't tapped into yet. We'd like to know about it. So then the next slide at this point just shows that core connector habitat. You know, fish passage plays a big role in connectivity, but right now that is kind of the opposite of where the connector habitats are. So we're playing around with how to incorporate that, or if this is really, at this point, the view of what we want for the watershed. All right, we'll go to the next slide. And this is the socioeconomic analysis. So these slides are outlined. We have a couple questions up front that we're trying to answer with this information, and at the bottom our questions we're still grappling with. So where are the locations that are important for recreation and public access in the watershed? Where are minority and low-income populations? And these aren't questions that we think we are providing answers to. These are questions that we think on some level are answered, and we're trying to pull that information together. And what locations are important for water supply and source water protection? So we have park data, park locations, public access points that the Bay Program has developed, minority populations and low-income populations. And I'll show that data next. But so some outstanding questions are, you know, is there data available to capture water supply protection areas? Is that a critical piece that we should have included in this? There's a layer from the Bay Program, water quality protection value. Is that a piece that should be wrapped in here? If we go to the next slide, here we're showing the blue dots are public access sites, parks are in green, and then the purple are low-income areas and minority population areas. And so when we spoke about identifying questions and restoration opportunity questions, you know, something that might come out of this is where can public access sites be added to better address low-income and minority populations. So that might be an aspect that could come out of this. Okay, next. Or another thought is how, once we get to the threats analysis, how are some of these public access sites, or are there sites that are threatened by future sea level rise or urbanization? So those are the things that we're starting to think about. Okay, next slide, Maria. So for the USAID's mission analysis, this is pretty straightforward. You know, where are USAID's projects now located, and what are the geographic boundaries of our authorities? So here's the pertinent data listed. It's where the dams and reservoirs, restoration projects, military land. So if you go to the next slide, we don't have our authorities shown in this map, but we have projects and military lands and our navigation channels. So this is a view of the landscape for our USAID mission work currently. Okay, we can move on to the next slide. So the other thing that we'd like to do is have a view of what sub-watersheds are the most degraded across the whole watershed. And then can we look at that and summarize problems regionally to try to then look at restoration opportunities. And so this analysis is leaning on some work we did for the Army Chesapeake Bay Comprehensive Plan in 2013. So that plan focused just on Army lands within the watershed, but we did a similar analysis. And this is the data that we used for that analysis. So we had three land use metrics, and they were percent impervious cover, percent forest, and percent forested riparian buffer. We also looked at fish passage blockages. We had two metrics for stream health. We had the 303D list of impaired streams, as well as the Chesapeake Bay Program-derived watershed-wide benthic IBI. And then we also included some metrics that looked at the nutrient impacts of nitrogen and phosphorus. And we're looking at utilizing this again. The next slide, I'll talk about some updates to changes that we want to make. So this is a schematic that shows the scoring and how we use that data to score the sub-watersheds in the Army Comp Plan. So we want to go through and make sure we have updated data layers. That was a few years back, so we want to make sure we have updated data. We're also wondering if maybe we should include some additional data, like there's a layer that the Bay Program has developed about the PCB impairments. Should that be incorporated into this? We haven't come up with a wetlands metric. That's kind of a big piece of watershed health, but we haven't come up with something that really speaks to that for the watershed. So if you have any thoughts on that, that'd be something we'd be welcome some input on. And then the other thing in the previous version of this, we used for nitrogen and phosphorus, the overall relative effectiveness metric, which was a measure of if you put a pound of nitrogen and phosphorus at a point in the watershed, what was its impact on the dissolved oxygen in the main stem of the bay? We're considering switching and using some of the Sparrow outputs that identify the highest yielding watersheds, sub-watersheds. So we're considering making that switch. But this is the general framework. And the next slide is the old results from the Army Comp Plan, but it'll give you Maria, if you go to the next slide,
I just wanted to make a quick comment before I move to the next slide. I just chatted into everyone, but just to highlight that if you want to expand anything to see it better, there's a plus sign at the top right of the slide, and you can zoom in on any of these slides. And there are going to be some specific maps later, so that might be helpful then, too.
Yep, great. So this is the results from that 2013 application. Our purpose here is to try to capture the degradation in the watershed. And you could see how you could draw some regional summary and characterization of, maybe up in the northern parts of the watershed, those yellow areas, what's going on there compared to in the green areas, the red versus the orange, and start looking at these regions are impaired by these activities. And I'm not saying this is going to be like earth-shattering thinking to anybody, but trying to visually show it and then turn it into what we could do to address those impairments. And so this was, again, from 2013, but we're looking to replicate this with updated and maybe tweaked data inputs. Okay, so we could go to the next slide. I'm going to introduce this, and then I'm going to turn it over to Jason O'Neill. But so for our threats analysis, we're looking to understand what areas are threatened by urbanization and climate change in the watershed, what areas are prone to increase persistent flooding in the future. We've thrown out some ideas of what analyses might be included in here, an eroding shoreline, looking at eroding shorelines, looking at wetlands migration, storm risks. So there's some thoughts there. And then we have a list of pertinent data that we've collected that we're looking to incorporate into this analysis. And so, Jason, if you're there, I'm going to pass it to you to talk about the sea level rise change mapping that you've been working on.
Okay. Thanks, Angie. Next slide, please. So, again, my name is Jason O'Neill. I'm the GIS team lead for this project, and I'm located out of the Norfolk District. So I wanted to quickly highlight one of the products that we've created that is related to the threats analysis. And that would be our sea level change mapping. So for this project, we wanted to evaluate the sea level at three time periods, 2025, 2050, and 2100. And we need to know where the sea level will be at those years so we can evaluate what the impacts will be on the landscape. So there is some existing sea level rise data that many of you will be familiar with, and that's the NOAA sea level rise data that is generated in one-foot increments from 1 foot up to 6 foot. And I wanted to quickly explain why that data won't work for us in the way we're looking to review sea level change. So, as I mentioned, we need to review the sea level at 3 years. And looking at this slide on the right side, for example, you can see in the year 2050, these are the sea level rise values at three different gauge sites. And you can see that for the same year in different locations in the bay, the sea level is very different. So you couldn't use the existing NOAA data to map these three dates. So what we did was we used the 11 existing gauges, the NOAA gauges, that are located within the Chesapeake Bay, and we used the USAIS sea level change curve calculator, which you can access at the link below, to generate a water level surface for each one of these dates. So the way the USAIS sea level change curve calculator works is you would select a gauge in the application, and you can see on the left side of the screen, it's the Sewell's Point gauge I have highlighted here. So for each gauge, it lists all the different years where sea level rise data is available, and it gives you a low, intermediate, and high estimate. And we've used the high for this case. So you can see in the red boxes, I highlighted the 2025, 2050, and 2100. So using that data, we can generate interpolate a sea level water surface based on the, it's called the natural neighbors interpolation method. So, go to the next slide, please. This is the end result of the sea level change mapping. It's the left side shows the entire extent of the project, and then there's a zoom in showing a little bit more detail. So, we delineated the sea level change boundaries on kind of a medium resolution data set. We used the USGS National Elevation data set. It's about 10 meter resolution. And you can see from the zoomed in map that the green area represents the 2025 sea level, the blue is the 2050, and the red is the 2100. So we will be using this data in the threats analysis and other analysis as well to determine what the impacts will be at different time periods. And that's all I had. I'll pass it back to Angie. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. Okay. And then so those are those composite analyses that were in the horizontal arrows. The one other piece we had was identifying priorities by others and looking for relationships with the initiatives of the various agencies. And in looking at this data, we differentiated that there are agency priorities for restoration versus conservation. So we're trying to keep them separate. And we have compiled some data here that I'm going to show, and I'm going to point out where we think that it's outdated, and we're requesting information on if there's new data out there. So we have Fish and Wildlife Service focus areas, we have NOAA habitat focus areas, and we have the business plan focus areas from NIFWIP. We've also seen and have the Ducks Unlimited focus on project areas. And then we were ready to use some data that we found with the Bay Program on point source and non-point source priority ag watersheds that was generated from some sparrow modeling. But that was done in 2010. So we have a question out as to whether there is updated priority ag watersheds been identified, or if that's something we should undertake to do. So if anybody out there has any input on that, contact us later or throw something in the chat box. But we're looking to capture that piece of it also. And then under the conservation category, we've identified Department of Defense Sentinel landscapes, the U.S. Department of Ag forest legacy areas, conservation fund focus areas, which also we're looking to confirm if we have a current layer for that, as well as nature conservancy priority areas. So some outstanding questions in this are there additional state priority layers that we should be incorporating and considering? And does anybody else out there have anything else that they'd like us to include in this analysis? We don't have a draft map to show for this work yet, but we're getting close. There's some of these outstanding questions, but we're getting close to having something pulled together. Maria, if you could go to the next slide. Then the other piece is this healthy habitats analysis. So where are the healthy habitats located in the watershed? And there's a long list here of data that we have compiled. And one outstanding question is we had seen some data on critical watersheds for freshwater species, but we think there was a fee associated with it, so we were looking for some input as to whether this is critical information that we should go through with acquiring. But we have, oyster reefs, brook trout, SAV. You can see the list there that of the information that we acquired. So if there's anything else that you are aware of that you don't, looking back in these slides later, you think we should have to include, let us know. But we're moving towards overlaying these data layers to produce a visual of healthy habitats in the watershed. Okay, I think the next slide then gets into where we're going to go with all this.
Yeah, sorry, it's Maria again. You're getting into some real details here, and there's a lot going on in the chat box, and we've had a few more people join, so I just wanted to, again, go over what's happening. If you've just joined us, you guys are all on mute until we get to the question and answer period. So we've asked everyone to chat in comments and questions, so you're seeing a lot of that happen. And you just need to go to the top right of your screen and hit the chat icon with the cloud, and then it should appear there. And to send a chat, you go to send to, and just to remind you to hit everyone from the drop-down menu because the automatic default is set to me, the host. So please select everyone and then send in your comments and your questions. And we've definitely had a lot of good stuff coming in, so thank you for that. All right, Angie, sorry.
Sure. Thanks, everybody. Okay, so the next slide then is, so Marie, if you can advance one more slide. Okay, so our restoration opportunities analysis, how are we going to tie all this together? We are formulating questions that we want to use this data to answer, and some are a lot of focus on habitat restoration as our main mission. We also have questions focused on connectivity, on the threats, and socioeconomic aspects. And so we wanted to walk you through one of the first ones that we're working to tackle. And this question was, how do the habitats targeted individually by the 2014 Bay Agreement align within the landscape, you know, or what are their relationships? So right now, we're looking at brook trout, black duck, sparses, riparian habitats, and fish passage. And so how do these spatial plans, each of these groups have spatial plans, and how do they related to the implemented projects by the work groups? So one question is, are there other targeted habitats with geospatial plans that we don't have captured? But we'll show you what we have. This is definitely a work in progress. So we'll go to the next slide. And this is the raw data that we have, so it's going to look messy. So bear with us here. All the dots, the greens and the yellow dots and some red dots, those are fish passage blockages colored by stream order. The pink that you see largely to the western part of the watershed is riparian buffer, percent riparian buffer. And this is based on the analysis we did back with the Chesapeake Army comp plan, so it might be a bit outdated, but it's what we have for right now. And so the darker the pink, the higher percentage of forested buffer in that in this sub-watershed. Hard to see, but what we have hatched are the watersheds where brook trout are located. And then the purple is the a metric out of the black duck work group about the 8 hectares of land that supports breeding black duck habitat. And so, you know, we're looking to see where the relationships are, where these plans overlap, with the intent of, you know, figuring out if there are ways to locate projects that have multiple benefits or places where all these plans are aligning, or maybe where there's gaps and voids. So if you go to the next slide, we took a stab now at digesting this information into something meaningful. And this is, again, a first draft. We know that there's changes that we want to make. But what you're seeing here are areas that supported black duck habitat that were the most forested riparian sub-watersheds that had the presence of black duck and that had at least a fish passage blockage present. And the other dots that you're seeing are proposed work plan activities, so where those efforts are then aligned with the spatial plan. I don't have a whole lot of else intelligent to say about this at this point, but this is, you know, so this is where we're moving with looking at these this data, digesting it to answer some pointed questions and identify opportunities within our strategy. So we know that we need to do some work on how we use the fish passage blockage information. That's not going to be just a present absence thing because that doesn't really tell you a whole lot. And some other pieces of that information that we want to work a bit further. But there's a good number of questions that we want to do this type of analysis with, and this is our framework. So we wanted to show you this to give you an idea, of what we're up to and how we're going to get to those final recommendations. I think that might be my last slide, Maria, so I'm going to pass it back to you.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, so that was a lot of information, and there's been a lot of stuff going on in the chat box. So I, for the Q&A period, I'm going to put you all off of mute, so in a second everyone will be able to chime in. And in the meantime, you know, if you've got other questions that come to mind, please go ahead. I'm going to start at the top of the questions that I've received in the chat box so far and go through all of those first. There's been a lot of interesting resources provided in the chat box as well, so I won't go through
a lot of the comments and connections and information that people are providing. But that is all exactly the type of information I know the team needs. And so I just ask Baltimore-Norfolk District, if you see anything in the chat box, any suggestion of a resource or a connection that you want to ask a question about, please chime in as well after I get through the questions, because you may have some follow-up thoughts on stuff that you are seeing in the chat box. So with that, let me just take you guys off mute.
All participants are now in interactive talk mode.
All right, so everyone should be able to speak now, and if we get a lot of interference, I can always put the mute back on, but we have about 65 people on the phone, so let me go ahead and start, though, with the first question, if I can find it. Let's see. All right, so the first one I saw was from Gregorio Sandy. Thanks, Gregorio. His question is, how will this comprehensive plan integrate with the state's P3 watershed implementation plans? So, Anna, let me pass it to you to see who should answer that.
I guess I'm going to do this next summer.
Andy's, I think, going to take a stab at this one.
I think this is one of these situations where the timing's not very well aligned. I think they're due next summer, but if the state and working with our state partners, any formulation that they're doing towards that effort, we would look to have discussions and understand that so that whatever we're proposing is in line with what their implementation plans will include.
I'll add to this too, Greg. Thanks again for the comment and Angie. The other thing would be, and we may get to this later in the presentation, but we're going to have opportunities now with the list of stakeholders here on the phone, among others, for periodic updates as part of this webinar series. But then also, we expect to have a draft report for review later this fall, which would provide an opportunity for the state to provide input into the plan. And so that draft report would then in turn be an opportunity for the state to use the results of this analysis as part of the 60-day comp plan to inform the state phase 3 implementation plans that, again, as you mentioned, would be due next summer. So we really want to emphasize the fact that there's a good opportunity here for collaboration among states particularly, which then could in turn inform the respective counties within the state, but we want to make sure that, again, the work that we're doing is in line with what others are doing and could also align closely with another comment we see in the chat box about the sequencing and prioritization. For phase 3, if we get into some details, there's opportunities that are identified here in the Chesapeake Bay Comprehensive Plan. The work that's presented here should presumably, since we're doing the stakeholder engagement along the way, should have everyone very much in line with what should be and what could be the next step for implementation as part of that phase 3 effort now to 2025. So hopefully that answered your question, Greg. You're off mute if you wanted to follow up. Okay. All right, thanks, Maria. Back to you.
All right, great. Okay, so next question is from Zoe Johnson. How does this data compare with the NOAA Sea Level Rise data avail? And then she has a link to a report there.
We're having trouble seeing that question, Maria.
It's from Zoe, and she wanted to know how the data the Corps is using compares to the NOAA Sea Level Rise data.
Got it. Jason, do you want to take a stab at this?
Sure. I know that NOAA has their own sea level rise curves that are different than the Corps, but they are similar. So I can't tell you off the top of my head how they compare exactly, but I know that there is two sets of curves, one from USAIS and one from NOAA. And we just are using the the NOAA, I mean, we are using the USACE high curve data because that's what we've used in the past for other studies such as the North Atlantic Coast Comprehensive Study.
Yeah, this is Zoe. I just I figured you wouldn't be able to answer that because we'd already corresponded about this. But in terms of being that data just came out about 2 weeks ago, and we just received the new data for all Chesapeake Bay tide gauges. So if folks don't have access to that, you can find it on that link that I sent out. It's my understanding that the NOAA will be providing that data to update the sea level rise curve calculator by that USACE uses. So I just think it'd be good to have a sense of for Chesapeake Bay tide gauges. I think there's only 12 to 13, just to see how that data compares. So we have an answer as to whether we're using the most available and up to date information.
Great, thank you.
Yeah,
I will take a look at your link.
Yep, I think that'll definitely, this is on, I think we'll definitely do a cross-check. And Zoe, we really appreciate it. You sent us a bunch of good resources that we're still sifting through. So I think that we're just, Jason just had worked up that map and was working on the analysis. So we'll definitely be doing a cross-check to see and make sure we have the most up-to-date data and how they compare.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. All right, before I go to the next since you guys are not on mute anymore, I'm hearing the beeps of people entering and joining, so I'm just going to turn those off really quick. All right, so next question from Raina. I'm sorry if I pronounced your last name wrong. Weitenberg says, unclear what the basis for prioritization is for each of the priority lists. Would be helpful for determining what fits into USACE or other areas of responsibility. Anna, you want to pass it to someone?
Yep. So I'll take a stab at it, and then I might shift it over to Andy or Dave. So I'm not sure what's being referred to as priority list here. As far as prioritizing projects, I know we haven't – that's definitely on our to-do list. We've just started doing our technical analyses and just trying to start to see what these – restoration opportunities look like. I think we have a good sense as a team as to where we want to go with how we want to prioritize things, and a big piece of that is the other agencies that we collaborate with, what are their priorities and where do we see the biggest needs and opportunities, and where do things align, multi-benefit projects, things like that. I think what we have planned to do was really start to put some things on paper as far as projects and how to prioritize them and get that out for feedback from the larger stakeholder group. So that would be our first stab at it. Did Andy or Dave want to add anything to that?
Okay. I think that he's
on the phone. Hey, it's Raina. So what I meant by that comment was that you are receiving priority lists from other agencies and other entities. I'm not quite sure whether you're receiving the basis for that prioritization.
So, Rena,
that would be critical. Yeah.
Sure, this is Angie. So when we're getting information from the other agencies, a lot of it is the watersheds that they've prioritized to focus their efforts in and for their missions to be focused in. And so there's going to be some differences based on what agency has identified those, but what we're trying to get out of that understanding is where within the watershed, and because there's quite a bit of overlap, where are these areas, where's the focus, where are the concentrated efforts being focused, just to understand how that is situated across the landscape. So we have developed a list that defines what each layer is, for the Fish and Wildlife focus areas, what that definition is that we will incorporate in an appendix or something like that. So we are trying to make sure that we understand the information that we have when then taking it to another step of analysis.
Anything else on that point? Okay, so next question I have from Gregorio on the timeline. What is the official timeline for completion of this plan?
So basically, we are doing the technical work now, and we're trying to have most of the technical work complete with the first round of draft report by summer. So definitely over the next 3 to 4 months is when we're really going to be engaging more and asking for more feedback.
Right, and then once we work through the internal analyses, and again, bounce that off the stakeholders here through these webinar forums, we'll pull that information together into a draft report, which at this point is scheduled to be released in September of 2017. Once we receive feedback in the form of comments from stakeholders as well as the public, we'll take that information and incorporate it in the next version of the report, work through the internal reviews within the Corps of Engineers, ultimately be able to complete the Chesapeake Bay Comp Plan and deliver to Congress in July 2018 the final report. So that's the current schedule. It's a 2-year mandate from our authorization. We're working very closely with Corps of Engineers division and headquarters to be able to work through that. We have a good working relationship to make sure we're all in line and make sure that we're going to meet the schedule. So we're at this point in time, expecting to be able to deliver this report to Congress in the summer next year, 2018 in July.
Great, thanks, Dave. All right, I just have a couple more questions. Again, there is a wealth of information here in the chat for the team. So after I get through these two questions, I'll turn to the study team and see if you guys have any follow-on questions based on the information you're seeing that would be helpful to ask now. So first, one quick question, is the Chesapeake Forest Restoration Strategy incorporated? That's from Sandy Doran.
So that's something that we want to go back and review. The work that we did with the Army Comprehensive Plan had incorporated some of those targets that were goals that were identified in there, but we needed to go back and take a fresh look at that. So thank you for pointing that out again.
Okay. All right, and then we have, will there be any effort to determine cost effectiveness of projects? I can imagine that urban areas may be highly prioritized due to impairments, but these areas are also likely to have the highest cost. Is the Corps going to analyze costs?
Good question. So I'll take a stab at it, and then maybe Andrew or Dave also want to weigh in, or Alicia out in Norfolk. But I think we definitely are going to be identifying cost ranges for projects. We're not going to be doing detailed benefit cost ratios for projects like the Corps would normally do for a site-specific feasibility level analysis. But I would imagine we have an economic piece in our scope, and we will be looking at cost effectiveness, I would say, on a high level. And I think we're definitely aware of the urban areas are typically more expensive than, say, a more rural area. And I think what will happen is we're going to have ranges of costs and things in there and identify potential partners and then the benefits of what we get out of it. Does anybody else have anything to add to that?
And I guess basically, elaborate, I guess, on what you're mentioning was range of costs for the measures. Alicia presented a snapshot of the measures. So the cost would be based on a list of measures that could be considered for restoration actions, and then parametric unit costs, because a range of parametric unit costs could be derived based on that information, among other examples of those types of projects, to be able to present it in this report.
Okay, thanks. And the last question. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, this is Alicia. I just wanted to add too. So this is a strategic comprehensive plan, but then as projects become implemented, then we would do a sort of detailed economic assessment. But yeah, I wasn't imagining we would do a detailed environmental modeling or cost benefits assessment. You know, it might be qualitative or at a very high level, but not like what you would typically see in our planning documents for a restoration project. But that would come later in the planning process as specific projects were implemented.
Okay, thanks. So the last question I've got here before I just check with the study team to see if you want to respond to any of the other resources provided, there's also some clarification in there about terms, et cetera, is maybe just something for you guys to think about and then chat in the contact details. But who is the best person to contact at the Corps if a state agency is interested in partnering on implementation or technical assistance? So if you, if Norfolk or Baltimore District, if you want to just chat in the best contact information, that would be great. And otherwise, let me then go to both Baltimore and Norfolk Districts and see, do you guys have any questions based on all the information you're seeing here in the chat?
Yeah. Maria, this is Anna. In response to that last question, we're actually, after the interactive, the next piece of the agenda, we're going to go over data calls and gaps and things like that. And so we're going to go over the best person. And basically, we're going to point you to our study website. We've got Chesapeake Bay Comp Plan email, and then my email address, annamcompton@ustatestartarmy.mil. So we'll go over that again towards at the last part of the agenda. We'll go over all that stuff.
Okay.
Is there any other items? And I guess we'll just say we really appreciate, we're scrolling through all the different data and information, and we really appreciate it. And we might be reaching out, if we've got questions, we might be reaching out to the folks that provided it, but we really appreciate the updates. And please keep them coming as you think of things even after this webinar, because this is what we really, really need to make sure we've got the most up-to-date data and going into our analysis. So thanks for that.
Norfolk District, any questions based on what you're seeing in the chat?
This is Jason O'Neill. I did have one comment. I've seen a couple of chats about the Chesapeake Conservancy high-resolution land cover data. I just wanted to let everyone know that we are aware of that data, and we will be using it in the study to update some of our existing land cover data that we have. So the answer is yes, we are using that data. That's all I had.
Thanks, Jason. All right, I did have one other question that came in via chat, and then I'll just go to the phone to see if anyone else on the phone has anything to add. We do have another the agenda coming up. Anna alluded to some interactive activities, some questions for you all, and then some more information on the Corps data calls. So from Pam Mason, is there a formal or informal process to consider the effects of climate on the longevity of project uplift with regard to habitat of water quality?
Yes, so this is Anna. So we, what Jason showed us and what Angie talked about, the threats analysis, we are going to be overlaying that information for sure, looking at sea level rise and climate change. And once we get to the point where we're starting to identify opportunities and restoration projects, we're definitely going to be looking at how those inundation areas, for example, overlay with where the projects are. Again, this goes back to our vision about we want, you know, resilient Chesapeake Bay, so we want to make sure that the projects that we're recommending are taking into account the changing environmental conditions that we're seeing in the Bay, and not just climate change, but also population changes, land use changes, all those sorts of things. Did anybody else on the team have anything to add to that?
This is Andy Sowers. I'll just add that one other piece of this that we haven't mentioned is we're working closely with Fish and Wildlife Service. They're preparing a report for us that will document and consider future threats, and the primary one of those is climate change to rare, threatened, endangered species. So that's something that we'll also be incorporating.
All right, great. So let me just turn it over to the phones. there are a number of you on the line, but if anyone else had questions, I did receive a few emails. Some of you are only on the phone and not on the webinar. So anyone verbally wants to chime in with a question or comment, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Adam Wright with the Department of Defense. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Great. I know, just trying to figure out the best way, you know, we can help feed information, and Heather Caesar and her group has already reached out to us on this. And I do see primarily what she was asking is the most productive would be encroachment areas that we want to see protected. Only some of those are super well defined if a project went through the REPI process, which is the Readiness and Environmental Protection Integration Program. Those have a lot of good maps and areas approved for protection, but all other facilities have the similar type of areas we'd want protected. So that's one part. The other part is each big facility certainly has integrated natural resources management plan. I just wouldn't want to go down the path of saying, oh, let me get all this data from those if it's already somewhere else. So maybe I'll take offline and call Jason or someone and talk about, you know, look at an NREMP and say, what works for you here? What do you need here? And what are you already getting, fish and wildlife, or do you have in your wetlands database? So I guess would Jason be the right person to talk to about that?
Adam, thanks. Jason, you want to respond?
Sure. Any GIS questions, I will be happy to take them.
Okay.
So if you need my contact information, I can chat that in.
Okay, great.
That sounds good. Thank you. Yeah, that probably makes sense to have a specific conversation offline so you're not spending time looking for things that he already has.
Yeah, you have, or you don't need the level of detail.
Right, exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Great, thank you. Thanks.
Great point. Other folks on the phone want to chime in with a question or comment? All right, I'll wait give you a few more seconds of silence, and then we'll go ahead and move on to the next part of the agenda.
Yeah, this is Kristen Saunders from UMSI's at the Bay program, and I know we've been sharing layers with you guys from our cross-goal team mapping project and trying to make sure that all the information aligns. One of the things that came up in our last meeting was what the partnership is doing in terms of the threat of infrastructure, knowing that there may be some big investments coming forward at the national level on infrastructure development or restoration of infrastructure needs, and how that might impact the landscape that we plan to be either restoring or conserving. So I just wondered if anybody's given thought to kind of the big picture infrastructure impact on this project and how we could reflect it in the work.
Anna, would you like to start?
Yeah, that's a great question. The focus of this effort, obviously, is the ecological problems, needs, opportunities, infrastructure. We're going to be looking at, you know, multi-benefit projects. I think as part of our threats analysis, we'll be identifying those inundation areas. Also, part of our authorities, we can look at public infrastructure specific as public infrastructure. So as far as the level of detail and focusing, looking for opportunities only to protect infrastructure, I don't know if we're going to get quite there. I think it'll be more we're looking for habitat, and we can also identify the infrastructure we could see at risk that wasn't necessarily specific to our scope. Does anybody else have?
Kristen, are you, and I think maybe what you're suggesting is that there could be large future projects, like new roads or bridges or et cetera, within the watershed? Yes.
Yeah, well, like new energy, energy roads, bridges, infrastructure. There's just been a lot of discussion about a big infusion of capital money being spent, particularly at the federal level, on large-scale infrastructure for this country. And, you know, to the extent that we know what those pathways may be and how they impact, we wouldn't want to plan a restoration action on a large scale, for instance, in a place where they're going to build a new road or pipeline. So I'm just wondering how we're capturing that information as a threat, or at least acknowledging the presence of that in our future planning.
I think the quick answer is we haven't yet, but I think there's an opportunity within our threats analysis if we can brainstorm together, or if there's information about a couple future, you know, whatever those future projects might be, we could then consider it within that context.
And
of where they might be located.
And also, I mean, I think part of what we were wanting to do was with the land use data layers, and if we know of big land use changes, we are going to be, we should be incorporating that. It's just a matter of getting a handle on from Department of Transportation, Department of Energy, whatever agencies it may be, what their big infrastructure plans are and if they're, how likely they are to happen. But I think we would capture that in the land use data layer.
So we'll continue conversations with you about that as we move forward.
Yeah, it's a good, we talked about that earlier on too when we were getting going.
Yeah.
So.
All right, great, thank you. Any other comments or questions from the phone? All right, well, I think we better go ahead and keep moving then. You can always keep chatting and stuff as we go to the next section of the agenda. And obviously, you know, as Anna mentioned and Jason already typed in his information, the conversation will continue directly between you. But I will go ahead and advance us to the first activity. So we've got three different activities next on the agenda, and they're all about sort of asking you, everyone on the phone, for a little more information, a little more specific ideas and input that you might have in just a more structured way as opposed to just chatting. And, you know, we're going to be using the annotate tools, the poll tool, and we thought, you know, we might as well, I don't know how many of you use AT&T Webinar, but we might as well get you used to the platform that we use because we are going to be having a few more webinars. And I'm sure we'll be using all of this then. So, Anna, let me just turn it to you to describe the purpose of the first activity.
Yeah, thanks, Maria. So what you're seeing up here on the screen, we've got an upper bay and a lower bay. And in full disclosure, the map didn't quite turn out as nicely as we thought as far as visibility. I think, so what we're looking for is, a couple years ago when we started scoping the study, one of the products we were to have, which was each state, was to have a sub-watershed plan. So basically they would choose a sub-watershed that they wanted a more detailed plan. So basically this is just restarting that conversation again. So what we wanted to see is just your area, your sub-watershed where you're really interested in, where you want to focus on, where you'd like to see a sub-watershed plan. Also, we recognize, you know, there's not just stakeholders, there's also NGOs, federal agencies, so if you've got, we want to see that too. So we want to see areas in the whole watershed where you would like to see maybe a more specific plan. And what I'll caveat with this with saying is if we want to take the input we get today, and it's going to be just a piece of how we end up screening and deciding what sub-watersheds we perhaps do a plan in. I don't want folks to feel like, oh, you know, the information we get today, that's the plan, that's the sub-watershed that we're going to work on. This is just kind of re-engaging and restarting that conversation, and it'll just be a piece of what we want to do, starting to kind of regather that information. And also, Angie mentioned the watershed degradation analysis that we're going to be working on, and that's going to be identifying highly degraded areas. So all this kind of, we're looking just for pieces of the puzzle to put it all together and see where things align. That helps a little bit.
Yeah, so and I'll go over specifics of what we are asking you to do and how to use the annotate tools. So for this activity, we've got the upper bay on slide 34, and the lower bay on slide 35. And you guys have the ability to use the arrows to toggle back and forth between those two areas. So what we'd like you to do is sort of, you know, pick or identify the subwatershed or subwatersheds that are most important or a priority to you and your organization. And it's important for us to know who is making the notes. So I'd like you all to use in the annotate tool the second, so under the marker in the top left corner, you have sort of looks like a pen and an arrow, and then under that you have an arrow. And I want you to use, and I'm just demonstrating, that specific tool because as you can see, it puts my name where I'm pointing. So first, make sure you have that tool selected. And if you care, you can change your color down below. But make sure you pick that one. And then the plus and the minus signs in the top right-hand corner will allow you to zoom in so you can see more clearly. Now, granted, this map is not as clear as we wanted, and this may not turn out as clearly as we wanted, but we're going to try anyways. So go ahead and zoom in to the area of interest and put your arrow there. Now, if it's a larger area, you can go ahead and use the marker tool. Several farther down, you've got, it says pen tool or pencil tool, so you can use the pen to circle an area, or there's also the check mark where you can select oval shape. And draw, I'll just demonstrate it over in here in the corner, you can draw an oval in the corresponding color to your arrow. Now, if your priority area is on the first slide, you can go ahead and mark it here, or you can use the arrow up top to tab to the second slide. I've already got a couple people on the lower bay tab selecting your watershed. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Joe. We've got John, ICPRB. So those are some great examples. Keep them coming. And we'll give you a couple minutes to go ahead and find your priority area. And if you have any questions or problems, just go ahead and let me know verbally since you're all off mute. And if you make a mistake or you need to move your arrow, there's an eraser tool towards the bottom. But make sure you just hit your own annotation so you're not clearing others. And thank you for humoring us and figuring this out. I do think, I mean, we're going to continue to use these tools on future webinars, so I'm glad you guys are jumping on board. All right, so we've got a lot of priorities in the lower bay so far. I'm not seeing as many in the upper bay. I'm seeing, Chris, I've got your arrow on the top left. I'm not sure if it was meant to go in the study area anywhere. And then I've got a square that's unidentified. If that's your square, if you can attach the arrow that has your name to it, that would be great. Let me go back to the lower bay. Again, you guys can toggle back and forth between upper and lower. Someone has the entire area as their priority. Got it. I give you one more minute. If anyone is having any problems, or if you need to be more specific, again, if you can't quite zoom in or get to where you need to go, you can always chat in any specifics, any explanations that go along with your arrows. All right, lots more on the lower bay. I'm going to just toggle back. I'll just wait, because I think sometimes when I toggle back, it toggles for you. All All right, just one more minute. So Jennifer, you just hit the, let me pause. I'm going to go ahead and toggle back to the upper. I don't want to interrupt you guys on the lower, but I think sometimes when I toggle back, it bounces you back as well. So just going back to the upper, you guys can toggle back and forth using the arrows at the top of the screen, but sometimes I think it might be a little challenging. So, all right, Sandy's moving her arrow over. All right, let me just hold on one sec. Let me toggle back to the upper. All right, so if you had problems toggling back to the upper, there you go. Okay, go ahead and mark on the upper. I'll stay here for a few minutes. And again, you can see this is not exactly a scientific process. But we had hoped it would be a little clearer, but it's still helpful. All right, I'm going to give you one more minute. And what we can also do at the end of the webinar is leave the slides up in case folks want to come back and make additional marks. Yes, absolutely. So I just got a question about, you know, can we provide additional input? And for sure. Like I said, this isn't a very scientific process. If you have more details, you can chat them in now, or when you have the additional contact information, you've got Jason's stuff information in the chat there, his email and phone, but Anna's, I think, and the study email will be provided at the end of the webinar, so you can always follow up with specifics because, again, this is not a very specific process that we're going through right now. Just to get a sense, though, of where the priority areas are. All right, so I think we better move on. Anna, any final comments on this activity before we move on?
No, just thanks for your input and definitely just follow up with that. We recognize, too, if you feel like you need to speak with others at your agency, you know, before putting in, if you weren't quite sure, just follow up with us. But we were curious to see where folks wanted to do work and if there was duplication of interest in certain sub-watersheds. So we appreciate the input.
Great. Okay. So moving on. All right, so next activity, implementation barriers to restoration. We're just going to use the chat box for this question. Anna, do you want to quickly sort of explain it?
Yeah, so hopefully it's pretty straightforward, and obviously one of the key messages and key takeaways we wanted you all to have was this plan, we want it to point to implementation and how do we do strategic partnerships, things like that. And we've had, as a team, we've had a lot of conversations over the last couple of months with all these different agencies. There's a lot of good work going on, a lot of plans. One of the common themes that we've been finding is there's been a struggle with implementation in the Bay. And so we're starting, as part of our scope, we're compiling those implementation barriers, and we are hoping to address them, maybe overcome them, identify plans, basically how to work through those barriers. So we were curious, Dave, there's a lot of folks we figured on the line that have done implementation of restoration projects or tried to, so we just wanted to get a feel from you all of just real simply some of the barriers you run into of how projects that were stopped or delayed or things like that.
Great. So so the format up there in the slide is your agency. Again, if you logged in without your agency affiliation, please go ahead and add that and then include the roadblock and explanation. So for example, Chris Guy, you don't have your affiliation, so if you can add that, but for example, Ellen Bryson, you do have your affiliation, so you're good. So just to make sure people know who is chatting in the information. I'm going to just give you a few minutes for that. So again, agency if you need it, and then the roadblock with an explanation if appropriate. And for your affiliation, if you didn't include it when you signed into the webinar, you can just add it to the chat response. So if you just have your name, then your chat can be affiliation colon roadblock. So for example, Kim Hernandez just chatted in Maryland Department of Natural Resources colon lack of funding, uncertainty about ecological impact. So just do it like that if your name doesn't have your affiliation in the webinar. All right, I'm going to give another minute or two for this one. Okay, so I'm seeing a theme here of funding, land ownership and property rights coming through on several of them. Need for information or additional information. All right, let's take one more minute. Thank you, everyone, for chatting in all of this. Anna, any quick thoughts on incorporating how this information will be incorporated? Anything additional?
I think we're going to digest it. We're seeing some of the things we've seen already. We're like, yep, that's a good idea. So it's exactly how we're going to do our best to address this in the report and think about these things. A lot of these things I know aren't new, you know, the real estate issues, but we want to do our best to the projects that we're looking at and opportunities. Maybe this will go into the screening, you know, the areas that are best for getting implemented. So.
Okay, thanks. All right, thank you, everyone. And if you want to keep chatting in, that is fine. Or if you want to chat in additional thoughts when the webinar concludes, I'll definitely leave the webinar open for a few minutes when we end. All right. So moving on. So we have one more kind of question activity, and then we're going to move into the sort of wrap up on the data call and the next steps path forward. All right, so the last activity is going to be a poll to answer this following question. Where can the Corps support your agency to assist in meeting the Chesapeake Bay Watershed Agreement goals? And the poll will have, I'm going to open it in a minute. I'll just let Anna sort of add anything in a second. But you'll have the opportunity to select two choices and as well as to chat in other. So before I open the poll, Anna, anything to add on the purpose?
Thanks, Maria. Not really. Again, this is just to get a flavor from the group represented today of where you're interested in. Obviously, part of this project is we're trying to see where the Corps can assist with meeting these goals. So we just want to see what agencies on the line are interested in partnering with us and different things we can do. So that's it.
All right, great. Thank you. So I've gone ahead and opened the poll. So what I'd like you to do is to select two choices. You just take your cursor and click the circle to the left of your top two choices, and then hit submit at the bottom of the poll. And I will wait until I see a large percentage of you completed, and then I will go ahead and close the poll and then share it. So you'll be able to see the responses once I share it. But I have 58 people in the webinar, and I can see as you respond, I can see sort of what the in-progress percentage is. So we'll just see how long it takes.
Hey, this is Chesapeake Bay Field Office. We have multiple agencies in our room, so we're wondering how to fill this out.
I'll give you 1 minute to reach consensus.
Yeah, fight over it.
The guy with the mouse wins.
The guy with the mouse wins. Yeah, I don't know. We don't have much time to achieve consensus between all of you. I guess you better chat in the different agencies and their preferences. So I've got so far three others. So if you hit other, make sure you chat in your other. And I've got about half of you who haven't started yet. So anyone having problems, don't forget to click the little circle, the two circles that you want next to your preferred choices, and then hit submit at the bottom. All right, a few more people are taking it. Anyone else having any problems? I've gotten a lot more others, so definitely chat in what your others are. I'm going to check the chat. I will definitely, let's see. Yeah, definitely chat in your others. And it'll be interesting to see if the others are areas that the core's mission areas can support. All right, so I still have a number of you not started. I'm going to just give you one more minute. Go ahead and click the two top choices and then hit submit. I still have 20 of you who haven't started the poll. I've got 30 of you who have completed it and a few of you who are in progress. So just one more minute. All right, I've got two of you still in progress. So I'll just wait until you guys are finished and then go ahead and close the poll. Anybody need more time? Just go ahead and chime in. If you need more time and you're on mute, I didn't hear you. All right, final 5 seconds and then I'll close it. All right, are you guys seeing the poll results?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, great. So about a little less than about half of you, a little less than half responded. And let me go check the chat since we have a number of others.
Two, what is that?
Baltimore District, let me just get a check-in with you on the any responses to some of the others that people have written in about. We've got climate resiliency, a comment about, you know, broader categories, et cetera. Any comments on those? Are you on mute?
No, we're not on mute. We're working on thinking.
Okay.
And reading, finding them.
Can I just drag it all the way down?
In the resiliency piece, we've talked about this a lot. I think it would be incorporated, any project that we do, would be incorporated into any category.
The riparian buffer, that's a great one, as well as the healthy, I think that was the protecting high priority areas. I think that's something that we're going to work to get towards, at least on some scale.
All right, I just wanted to quickly check in with you on that. So, all right, the poll results shows a pretty high, again, only half of you responded, but there's a pretty high preference for the ecosystem restoration, including restoration of submerged aquatic vegetation. That one definitely clearly comes out on the top. So I think that will be interesting feedback for the team. So with that, we better keep moving. We've got just under 15 minutes left. All right, so let's move over to the sort of data call review and the wrap-up. I'm going to pass it to Christina May, who's a biologist with the Planning Division, Baltimore District.
Thanks, Maria. So while we've been working through our geospatial analysis, we realized that there are some data gaps, and we recognize that we need help from the stakeholders to fill these gaps. We thought the best way to facilitate filling in these gaps was to have a data call. One of the things the Corps is tasked with for this plan is to make sure that we adopt and align our actions with what others are doing. So this first data call is, we know that there is a lot of recently implemented or about to be implemented restoration projects in the Bay, but there really isn't one good place to get all the data. So we are asking for GIS data for recently implemented or about to be implemented environmental or ecosystem restoration projects and or programs. This data will be used to create a data layer or database of restoration projects with corresponding maps. And this data will be shared with stakeholders and can be used for collaboration purposes and for future planning efforts. The right side of the slide shows the data request form for restoration actions. And then the information that we need is listed on the bottom of this form, in addition to any GIS data you have. And on the bottom left part of the slide is the link you can use to download this form. Next slide. One of the Corps' objectives is to identify at least one project per state and in Washington, D.C. that can be considered for implementation or technical assistance by the Corps, and that supports the 2014 Bay Agreement. So the Corps, we are looking for candidate restoration projects that have minimal risk and uncertainty that can be implemented without further research, complex modeling, or data collection to achieve immediate, meaningful environmental benefits to the Bay. It would be helpful to indicate your higher priority projects. And we are looking to identify strategic partnerships and funding sources to implement recommendations, so projects. This slide also shows the data request form on the right side of the slide for the candidate restoration projects. and we are asking you to provide the information listed on the bottom of this form. We really want GIS data and the information on the form, but if you only have, like, project information and no GIS data, we can also take that as well. And I also provided the link on this slide to download the data request form. Next slide. Please only submit one project or program per form, and you can submit in the following ways those two emails, so the Chesapeake Bay Comp Plan email, or you can email them to Anna Compton. And these forms and data are due by March 7th, 2017. Next slide. Next step, as I mentioned, the data calls are due March 7th. We mentioned that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, their planning aid report, is due to the Corps in late March, and we will talk more about that in the April webinar. We have future stakeholder webinars in April and June. Our draft report for review will be out fall of 2017, and then final report summer of 2018. Next slide. And that's it. Thank you very much for participating in this webinar. We really appreciate you guys taking time out of your busy schedules. And if you have any questions or, you know, want to provide data for our data calls, you know, I just showed you those email addresses, or you could go to our webpage, which is, I think, listed throughout this these slides.
This is Dana Jackson over at the USDA Beltsville Agricultural Research Center, and I did have a question on the size of the projects that you're looking for. Is there a minimum size that you're looking at, or is anything fair game?
Size, so anything is fair game.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
Do other folks have questions about any of those requests in the data call that Christina just went through?
This is Elisa Ortiz with the Army Environmental Command. I just have a comment. So every year we have to report BMP data and project data. So there is all that data historically, what we've been implementing as far as project data and any BMP implementation. So that all gets reported annually. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to look at that data that that gets reported through the Navy.
Yep, Elise, this is Anna. I got your phone call. We haven't returned your call yet, and so we appreciate that data. That's specifically for military projects, correct?
Well, I don't know what you mean by military. I mean, like, so we report the funding sources. You know, most of ours is, you know, like O&M. So, mm-hmm. like, the projects can be, or, like, BMP implementation is going to be compliance funding, bank funding. I mean, those are projects that we report every year what we do on an annual basis. For the executive order goal.
Got it.
I can chime in a little. This is Adam. Hi, Elisa.
Yeah.
It's our office that puts that out, and we do summarize that and submit it to our annual report and all that, but I have this data call on my desk trying to figure out how to approach it. So I probably will be talking to people there at the core to kind of figure out what level of detail they want.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking most of what they're asking for is already available through that data call.
Right. This is Dana again over at BARC. I mean, we provide to the jurisdictions the spreadsheet they require for the roll-up annually to EPA, and not sure whether or not you have that available or would like us to just forward that to you.
Um, Yes, or if you can, if it's available online, if you pop it right in the chat box, or else we can follow up. But yeah, so that's definitely some data sources it sounds like we need to look through.
Yeah, I mean, they're basically Excel spreadsheets.
Okay.
At least for Maryland.
Got it.
Yeah, same for DOD. And probably what I'm thinking is not so much your water quality BMP data you want. It's more your natural resources restoration projects is what I'm thinking. So we'll talk. I'd rather talk offline, and at least you and I can talk. Maybe we can have a conference call and figure out what cross-section or what slice we compile, which I can do pretty easily.
All right, sounds good.
Spreadsheet. Yep. Thanks.
All right, I've got another question in here. We had a question about size. There's also a question about costs. What is the range of costs you're looking at for these projects?
Right now, we don't have, we really don't want to screen anything out based on cost or size, so we want it. If you have candidate projects, we want to include that. So there's no... there's no limitation there right now.
Okay, great. Thank you. Let's see. There was another suggestion to look at the data layers available via the North Atlantic and Appalachian Landscape Conservation Cooperatives. When you guys chat in links into the chat box, that's also super helpful. The team has a direct link to that data that's been super useful. So we just have a couple more minutes. Any other questions, I think, about the data call or about anything else before we wrap up? Or any other comments or input or feedback, anything? All right, I'm hearing a lot of silence. So again, if you have any other comments or thoughts on any of the previous questions that have come up either in the chat or the slides, I will leave the webinar open, I think, until 12:05. And then I'll close it. So if you want to keep chatting in any information, again, you've got emails. You can also respond, send your comments to the email addresses. But I'll leave it open for a little longer. And I do have one other question that just came in. Before we wrap up, will the data you assemble be made available to stakeholders at the end of the study?
Yeah, we were just typing that in. Absolutely, everything that we do will have a rollout, the draft, final, the data. One of the products is a geo database that's going to be an appendix to the report. So, of all the maps, the data layers, everything's going to be organized and will be shareable to anyone who wants it.
Okay, great. So with that, I'll go ahead and wrap up and just reiterate the thanks to all of you for participating. There was just such a wealth of knowledge shared, especially in the chat box, that I know the team really appreciates. There's so much going on in the Chesapeake Bay, and it's really important to kind of figure all of that out, keep track of it, incorporate it, don't duplicate efforts, et cetera. So keep any different additional information, keep providing it in the chat for the next 5 minutes, or go ahead and send it in via email. And just a quick point on logistics. So as you exit the webinar, a box will pop up, and it will ask if you want to save files. So you can save several of the files that we've used today if you click that box. So go ahead and do that if you want the information now, but it will be available on the website as well. I've chatted in that link several times. And just a reminder, when you join the future webinars, either in April and or June, please do log in with your agency affiliation when you join the webinar. That way, we'll be able to see where you're from right off the bat. So with that, thank you very much. And we look forward to hearing from you in all the different ways via the email and the website and the future webinars, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your conference is ending now. As requested by the host, please hang up.